Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Creative Kindergarten Podcast. My name is Amanda, and I'm an early childhood educator in Ontario, Canada. And this podcast is a place where I talk about all things kindergarten. I pick a topic for the week, and I share my thoughts, my ideas, my learning around that topic. For this week's episode, what I wanted to do was do another Q&A where I get to answer any questions you guys had. What I did was I posted a Q&A sticker on my Instagram stories and people submitted some questions for me. I also just have some questions that I just get asked a lot just in general. So I thought I would also take this opportunity to answer some of those questions. But yeah, if you're not following me over my Instagram, if you ever have any questions, I'm usually over on there answering. It's a little bit slower at this point because of the baby. So I'm trying to answer as many questions as I can through my DMs. And also, DMs are weird on Instagram. I don't know if anybody else has noticed this. I've said this before in the past. Sometimes messages don't pop up until days later. So if I'm not answering you right away, I'm definitely not trying to ignore you. I'm either really busy with baby or Instagram's just decided it doesn't want to show me the messages that day. So yeah, let's just hop into this week's episode. I'm going to be answering some of the questions that I got from you guys. All right, so the first question I got asked was, what is your favorite part about being a new mom? There's like a lot of great things about being a mom. I will say the not sleeping thing is the hardest part for me, but seeing all of like things for the first time through his eyes, even though he's really young, so he's not really actually seeing anything, but having the opportunity to experience things for the first time with him is just amazing. And then also just how fast he's doing new things. Like, I know they like babies, they develop, right? I'm an early childhood educator. I know about child development. But every day it seems like he does something new or he notices something new. And it's just crazy to me how fast, like, he's learning things. I thought, you know, you might not notice things all the time or it might take a long time for him to change and do stuff. But that's the part that I'm loving the most, but also that is shocking me the most because it's just coming so fast that he's learning new things and he's doing new things, like the smiling and the giggling. And then the other day I was changing his diaper and he made a noise I'd never heard before. And I was just like, oh my goodness, what is this? And so, you know, all of these new things that he's developing when he started seeing our faces and like recognizing our voices, my husband and I's voice. That was pretty amazing when he's starting to track toys that I put in front of him, where he's able to track them. He's starting to try to grab at things. So, in case you don't know, my baby is now 10 weeks old. Yeah, 10 weeks old. And he's just the cutest little thing. So that's my favorite part about being a new mom, is just seeing all the new things through his eyes for the first time, but also seeing how fast he's changing, which is also sad at the same time. But I guess I'm an ECE, like that child development piece, like being able to experience it firsthand has been pretty amazing. The next question I had is more about, now we're moving into the classroom. That was me talking about my personal life, but now we're moving into classroom questions. And so somebody has asked me about transitioning. So if you are in a classroom like I am in Ontario, where we don't have a separate place to go eat, like we don't have a cafeteria, we eat in our classroom at our tables within the classroom space. I know that there's some places in the States, maybe even in Canada, I don't know, maybe even in Ontario. I've just never been in a school that has a cafeteria where you physically leave the classroom to go eat. But because we use our tables in our classroom to eat, having, you know, centers set up, and then you have to tidy them up so that they can eat. So this person was asking, like, how do I transition from, doing centers, whatever we're doing, using the materials, to going into a snack or eating time where we now need to use those same tables to eat at. So first of all, I'll talk about snack. I started this a couple years ago with my teaching partner, where we had an open snack table. And we did this, so the year after COVID, I did it with my teaching partner. We had a class and we did an open snack table. We did it for a few months and then we decided it just was not for those students. It was not working. So we went back to having a whole group snack. But then last year we tried it again and it lasted all year where students could, there was just always a table that was open that students could go to and have their snack whenever they wanted. So they could just, you know, decide right when we started off the school day, maybe they hadn't had breakfast that morning or they had breakfast really early and they were hungry, whatever it might be, they could have snack right then and there, right when we started off the day. Then if there was students that had maybe just like literally had a bagel on their way to school, they weren't hungry, then they could have their snack later on in the morning. So it just gave them the opportunity to regulate their own, you know, hunger and hunger cues and decide when snack was ready, like when they were ready for snack. And so having that open snack table kind of solves that problem. They're not, and it eliminates a transition as well. We don't have to stop what we're doing, clean up, have a snack, you know, clean up from the snack and then go back to centers. It was just perfect that students were able to have a table open at all times. How that worked for us is that when students came in the morning, they had a name card with their picture and their name on it that they used to sign into the classroom. So they would take it, it was on magnets, and they could put it on like our radiator that was in the front of the classroom that was magnetic. And so whatever sign-in option you use, you can do the same thing or you can start a sign-in option if you'd want. But so they would sign in the morning. We knew how many students were there. And then whenever they wanted snack, they would take their name card and put it on a chair at the snack table. And that way we could keep track of who had had snack and who hadn't had snack. So when it was coming time to like the end of, you know, the time when they could have snack, so we were getting close to lunchtime, I'd be able to call out like, oh, Dwight, Jim, Pam, you have not had snack yet. This is your last opportunity to have snack, because I could see from who had taken their name cards who had already had snack. So it's just a good way to keep track, because I know some families really want their kids to eat, or maybe you're concerned that, you know, it's the same kids not eating snack because they're so engrossed in their play or whatever it might be. And just an easy way to keep track of who had had snack. And it also saves their spot at the table. So if they're, you know, there was five or six chairs at the table, so there's only five or six kids that we could have snack at the same time. So if they wanted to have snack, they had to bring their name over and put it at an empty chair in order to have snack, and that just saved their spot. And then if a kid really wanted snack, we would have them bring their name card over, and then I would help them keep an eye out to see whenever there was an open spot for them, and I would help them put their name there. It didn't happen very often where kids were like freaking out that they didn't have a spot to have snack. It happened every once in a while. And then if it happened on like a large scale, I think maybe once or twice during the school year, like a bunch of kids wanted snack, I would just open another table for them, or I would bring an extra chair over to the table. Like, I'm not going to deprive a kid who's starving or anything like that. I would just like problem solve it in the moment, but it didn't happen very often. And it worked really well for the group of students that we had last year. It would be the same thing for the morning, and in the afternoon, it was just open snack whenever they wanted. Especially in the afternoon, I find sometimes kids are just not hungry for afternoon snack, and that was okay with us. You don't necessarily have to eat if you're not hungry. So that worked really well last year. The year before, we tried it, and the kids could not regulate themselves. We had kids that would sit there, and they would eat their entire lunch, all their snacks, their entire lunch, like first thing in the morning. And then by the time like lunch came along, they were starving again. And, you know, if I thought for a moment that they just did not have enough food in their lunchbox, that would have been a conversation I would have had with their family. But it was just like they just kept eating and eating and eating and talking to their friends at the table, which is something that we do want. But their self-regulation skills were just not at the point where they could regulate themselves to like stop eating and then move on to something else. And we were policing it more than we needed to be like doing it. So we just took that away for those students at that point, because it was just becoming more of a hassle than anything else. So you know your group of students, you can try open snack. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. If it works, great. You've just eliminated some transitions in your day. You've provided them opportunities for practicing self-regulation skills. It's open snack table is a game changer if it works for you and your students. If open snack doesn't work, and also when we needed to tidy up for lunch, because then lunch is also at the tables. What we did is, I'm going to put this in like air quotes that you cannot see, like we trained, air quote, our students to be able to tidy up when we needed them to for our centers. And what we did was we asked them to tidy up to the center of the table. Our tables were massive. If you've ever seen different kinds of tables, we had the flower tables, which are big round ones with like cutouts where the chairs go. And there was honestly a lot of empty space in the middle of the table that was kind of wasted because some kids can't even reach the middle of the table. And so this worked out perfectly that we would just tell the students, you know, tidy up all the materials to the middle of the table. And it takes some training at the beginning of the year, like model how this looks. We would just pile all the materials into the center, keep it like they would tidy it, keep it neat and tidy in the middle of the table. And then they were had space to eat. So, you know, if you don't have enough space at the table to tidy materials to the middle of the table, maybe there's a spot in the classroom where you tell students that they have to arrange the materials for the for snack time or lunchtime, whatever it might be. And again, you model it for the students, you show them how you want it done. We had a big ledge along the bottom of our window that students could tidy to as well. So just finding a spot within your classroom that, you know, maybe it's on a shelf, maybe it's off to like the side of the sink or something, wherever that might be in your classroom. And you just say, okay, it's time to tidy. And we always said tidy to the middle of the table. And then kids knew to just put the stuff in the middle of the table. And then again, in Ontario, we're lucky. Teaching partner and ECE partner work together in the classroom. So if we were transitioning from a center to, you know, let's say a whole group lesson, and then afterwards we knew we were eating lunch, whichever one of us was not teaching at the time, we would clean the tables so that, you know, that it was ready for them to eat off of. Because I don't know, my child, when he goes to school, I want to make sure that he's eating off of a sanitary surface as well. So I always made sure we cleaned the table so that students were eating off of a clean surface, not stuff that, you know, tons of materials had touched. And yeah, that would be just how we would do it. The transition was just, you know, easy. I'd either say, like, I would usually give them a 5-minute warning. So, oh, in 5 more minutes, we're going to tidy for lunch, or we're going to tidy for shared reading or whatever it might be. And then after those 5 minutes had passed, we'd go hands on top. And then I'd say, all right, it's time to tidy to the middle of the table. Let's say it's the end of the day and we're tidying for the end of the day. I'd say, okay, we're tidying. Can you please help us put away everything? And then they would just, if it was materials that they knew where to put away, they would put them away. If not, they usually either put them on the ledge or put them in the middle of the table so that we could easily tuck everything back where it belonged. But just, again, it's modeling. It doesn't just happen at the beginning of the year. By the end of the year, like, our classroom was tidy without us really having to do anything. But at the beginning of the year, it's something that you need to model. It's something that you need to show them how to do. That's part of, you know, coming to kindergarten for the first time and being in a school environment where you need to take care of materials, where you need to organize materials, thinking about like the next year when they're going into grade one or whatever grade when they start having desks and they need to keep their own desks organized. How does that look? And so this is just starting that process for them of being able to, you know, clear the space and tidy the space and keep it organized so that other things can happen as well. So I hope that like clears up. I get that question a lot, especially last year when I was in the classroom and I was showing how I have videos of like how our classroom was set up in the morning, and people would often ask me like, well, what do you do with all these nice setups once the kids are eating? I open snack table, so we didn't need to disturb it for most of the day. But if they needed to tidy for lunch, it just goes into the middle of the table. And then after lunch, it was easy for me or my teaching partner, again, whoever was not teaching whole group, to just kind of place the materials quickly again at the spot. So after lunch, my teaching partner would usually do a math lesson. So what I would do while she was doing her math lesson, I would clean the tables. Again, because they just ate at the tables, I would clean off the tables, the surface of the tables. And then as I was cleaning, I would put the materials back and set everything back up to the way it was before lunch. And we were ready to start our afternoon. So I hope that helps. A very long-winded explanation of how we do lunch and snack in our classroom. But that is the basics of how that worked for my teaching partner and I last year, and how we tried to do it the year before. And again, some things work 1 year and then they don't work the next year. Some things work, you know, in January, but they didn't work in September. You really just have to work with the students that you have. And, you know, you can always try something. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And then, you know, figure out what does work for you and your students. This next question is also another one that I get asked a lot. And it's, do we have centers at the same time that we play or have play centers, or, you know, can students go to play centers when you have like literacy or math centers or whatever it might be? And I've answered this question, if you've listened to this podcast, quite a few times, but I think it bears repeating. And, you know, you probably have not listened to all 160, I think we're at 168 episodes of the podcast. So I'm going to answer this question again. There is no difference between, I'm going to say, academic, more academic centered centers and play centers. For our young learners, especially kindergarten age students, and I would argue for students of any age, to be honest, play is learning for these students. So even though they might be at a dramatic play center, at a building center, and they might not be, you know, practicing explicit math or literacy skills, which is typically what educators mean by academic centers, just because they're not explicitly practicing those skills doesn't mean that they aren't learning other very important skills, and I would argue just as important, or that they're not even learning math and literacy skills. You know, think about playing in a dramatic play center with, you know, a group of 4 to 5 students. The oral language skills that they are using and practicing within that center, we talk about, you know, the science of reading, and part of that is oral language skills. And, you know, to be able to read, you need those skills first. You can't read if you don't have any oral language skills. So having a way to practice those through play is fantastic. Think about the social skills, the problem-solving skills, the self-regulation skills that students are learning within the dramatic play center or, you know, a block center. They're massive. All those problem-solving skills that they are, you know, working through with their peers or working through while they play is huge. And especially now, I'm finding, I don't know if it was pandemic and school shutdowns and all that kind of stuff, or if it's just a change in families and lifestyle and child rearing philosophies. I'm not sure what exactly is happening. I'd love to see somebody study this, but those social skills, those problem solving skills seem to be on the decline as students enter the kindergarten classroom. So, you know, there is no difference to me between quote unquote academic centers and play centers, because students truly, truly need all of it. And it's like, you know, in Ontario, we have 3, 4, and 5 year olds. The skills that they're learning through those play centers are just as important as the tabletop centers that we might have set up for our students to practice literacy or math skills. So, short answer, no, there is no separate time for both. We have open-ended centers where students can self-regulate and, you know, go to whatever learning opportunities that they would like to engage in. You know, oftentimes they get asked, well, if you let them pick where they want to go all the time, I would have kids that would just play at the block center. Okay. I would not care if a kid always wants to play at the block center. If that child really loves playing with blocks and really loves playing with his friends at the block center, I said his, and that was very his or her friends at the block center, great. They can play at the block center. I might introduce materials at the block center to work on some of the skills that we're working on. Maybe I'm going to introduce something to work on patterning or some letter blocks or some number blocks added to it. Maybe we'll do some science experiments or give them like a STEM challenge to do with the blocks. Maybe I introduce some spatial awareness skills into the or spatial reasoning skills into the block center to practice those skills. You know, you can introduce materials into those centers and, you know, give them challenges that work on other skills that they might need as well. If, you know, you have some targeted skills that you want to be doing small group with that child, then you can pull them to do those small groups, right? Maybe we've learned the letter, I'm going to just say letter S, and you know that child through assessment has not mastered the letter S. I usually tell that student at some point today, I'll tell them this at the beginning of the beginning. If they, I know this is going to be more of a struggle for that student, we need to work on a letter S today, or I'm going to work with you today. At some point, I'm going to call you over to my table, and you can come back to playing with blocks after we're done. And then if I call him at some point when I'm ready, I'll say, okay, Mark, it's time to come over to the guided table. And he's very immersed in his play. And he can, sometimes what they do is they start, you know, especially at the beginning of the year, they don't know. They start pulling a fit or they scream no or whatever it might be. And I'll say, okay, I hear you. You don't want to leave your play right now. If I give you 5 more minutes, would that help? And then sometimes yes, sometimes no. And, or what I can say is, you know, when we come back from playing outside at recess or when we come back from lunch, you're going to come to my table first and then you can go play with blocks. Sometimes that helps too, where they're not already immersed in the play and you're calling them first over to something. That's a strategy that I use a lot with my students, and I'll reassure them again. I'll say, okay, when we're finished our whole group or whatever, when we're coming in from outside, I'll say, hey, remember, I need you to come over to the table for a few minutes and then I'll remind them, and then you can go back to playing with your blocks, okay? And that kind of relieves that little stress of having to leave a preferred activity to go do something that, you know, they might not necessarily want to do. Or sometimes if I know that, you know, that preferred activity is very preferred at the moment and I want to, you know, assess this child on patterning skills or whatever it might be, I might just bring the materials over to him and then just do it with the preferred material that that child is using. It doesn't necessarily have to be something that I pull them from to break their play. Sometimes it's just bringing it to them. So, and then again, throughout the year, this is a skill, those self-regulation skills that we're working on with students to try new things, to go visit in other centers. And over the school year, they might start, you know, trying different opportunities as well. And that's something that we can encourage as educators. But yeah, open free choice centers is something that I have used in the classroom for, I think, since I started 10 years ago. I will put a blog post that kind of explains a little bit more about our free choice centers. So if you want to check that out, that'll be in the show notes for you as well. There might even be a whole podcast episode attached to it that answers even more questions and goes into more detail. But I'll put that in the show notes for you so that you can check that out. And our last question of this podcast episode is about my 3-day read alouds. Another one I get asked frequently is, how do I introduce the vocabulary of my 3-day read alouds? So if you don't know about my 3-day read alouds, I post my plans for using picture books for 3 days to work on a variety of skills with my students. One of them being vocabulary. We also work on comprehension skills, inferencing skills, all those amazing things that you can get from a read aloud. And we do it over a 3-day period. So we reread the book for 3 days. It doesn't necessarily have to be 3 days in a row. I usually read the same book over a week. So I might read it 2 days in a row, take a break for a day or two, and then read it again. Or I might read it first time, take a break for a day or two, and read it 2 days in a row. But over a week, I usually read the same book 3 times. And I have a list of vocabulary words, a list of questions that I ask students on each of the days. And I post those 3-day read aloud plans to my Instagram. I'll put a link in the show notes to those if you would like to check them out. I love using 3-day read alouds. I have a whole blog post about them. That's what I'll link in the show notes. That way you can find all the 3-day read alouds and learn more about what I do for them. But my question that I get asked probably the most about them is, how do I introduce the vocabulary? So when I'm picking my 3-day read aloud books, what I do is I pick books that have, you know, tier 2 or like very good vocabulary in them, vocabulary words, I should say, because I want to be able to teach my students very explicitly what these words mean. So I'm looking for those rich texts with my 3-day read alouds. And then I have a list, usually about 10 words, sometimes less, like 7 to 10 words is typically what I would want to do. And so I often get asked, like, how do I introduce these words to the students? Do I talk about all the words before I read the book, or do I talk about the words as I'm reading the book? So for my vocabulary words, I will introduce a vocabulary word if it is crucial to the understanding of the text. So, let's say my mouth is a volcano. This one always comes to my mind. Kids need to know what a volcano is. I would not take for granted that all kids know what a volcano is, especially because I have students who are, ESL students who are just, learning English for the first time. They might not know what a volcano is. And they also in the book, the word erupting comes up a lot. So we want to make sure that students understand that word before we read it. But there might be words that come up within the book that are not crucial to understanding the text, but are great vocabulary words. I can't remember. I don't have the book on hand to think of any other vocabulary words that might come up. But so volcano and erupting might be the two words that I talk about before I read the book, whereas all the other vocabulary words that are on my list, I will talk about as they come up within the book itself. I just posted a 3-day read aloud for Ruben. I think it's called Ruben Loves to Play. I should double check that I'm got the right name of the book before I keep going. But I'm pretty sure it's When Ruben Plays. That's what it's called. When Ruben Plays. And it's a story about a boy learning to play the violin and how he perseveres to be able and practices to be able to play it. And so, violin, again, I'm not going to just assume that my students know what a violin is. So before I read the book, I might point to the cover of the book that has the picture of the violin and say, "Oh, when Ruben plays," and I say, "Well, what instrument is he playing? He's playing the violin." But I don't know if there's any other words. I'm looking at the word list now. I don't think there's any other words that they need to know to be able to understand the text, but there's words like orchestra and maestro and baton and audience, crescendo, cacophonous, tempo. All those words come up within the text, and they're fantastic music vocabulary words if you're looking for a book to introduce some music lessons to your students. But they are not crucial to understanding the text as a whole. So when I come across the word orchestra within the text, then I'll say, "Oh, I don't know what the sentence is, but let's say it says Ruben sees the orchestra," and I might say, "Oh, the orchestra. This is a group of musicians. They all play different instruments and they perform together." And I might point to it on in the book as well so that they understand it. And then I repeat that definition of orchestra every time I read the book, so that really they're hearing it over and over again because they might not pick it up the first time. And that's the whole point of doing the 3-day read aloud, is giving the students the opportunity to really learn about the different vocabulary words and have develop their comprehension skills. So that's typically how I do vocabulary with my students. Sometimes what I've done is also printed out word cards with pictures of the different words. So maybe if I was doing a music lesson with the book, When Ruben Plays, I might have different vocabulary words printed out and have a picture of what that word is. So maybe, tempo and beat, I might have them printed so that I could reference them when I'm doing my music lesson. What was the other word? Maestro, baton, those might be words that I have set aside so that I can revisit them when I'm teaching my music lesson with my students. But yeah, that's how I typically do my vocabulary lessons with my students in kindergarten. As they get older, I know that vocabulary lessons become much different, where we talk about like root words and suffixes and affixes and all that kind of stuff. I don't do that with my kindergarten students typically. But I definitely do like to introduce new vocabulary words to them. All right, that's it for my Q&A for now. If you have any other questions, please make sure that you reach out to me over on my Instagram. If I get enough questions, maybe I do another Q&A episode. Or if you want clarification on any of the answers that I gave today, make sure you follow me over on my Instagram at Creative Kindergarten Blog on TBT. I know it's long. It'll be linked in the show notes for you, but you can reach out to me on there and I can answer any other questions you might have. Thank you so much for listening to me on this podcast episode. If you're not already following me, make sure that you do so that you know whenever I put out new episodes of the podcast, which is usually every Tuesday. And I forgot to mention this at the beginning of the podcast episode, even though I told myself I definitely had to mention this. Camp K3. So Mariah from A Playful Purpose is hosting a snow day PD day where she's got a bunch of really fun sessions for professional development.
And she even has like some other fun things happening. She has like a cookie decorating happening, all kinds of really cool stuff going on. If you have not already signed up for it, I would highly recommend that you do. I am presenting on refreshing your classroom environment. So basically what my session is about is like I presented at Camp Kinder over the summer and I presented on setting up your classroom environment. And the premise of my PD this time around for Snow Day is, you know, you've already set up your classroom environment, but now you've gotten to know your students. You are, you know, aware of how your day is going, how your groups are working, all that kind of stuff. So how can we refresh our space to best fit the needs of the students that we have and, you know, meets your needs as well. And so I go through how you can problem solve, how you can think of your classroom environment. And I really hope that you will join me for my session. I will put a link in the show notes for you so you can sign up for it. Definitely check it out. There's a whole bunch. I think there's four other sessions as well. Mariah always puts on great professional development webinars. She did. This is my third time presenting. It was Camp Kinder before, and I presented twice with Camp Kinder. Now it's Camp K3 Snow Day. This is my third time with her, and I keep going back to it for a reason. I really enjoy it, and I love listening to the other sessions as well and the other presenters who are so knowledgeable. Definitely check it out. I don't think it's very expensive either. I think she has it set for a very reasonable price for the amount of sessions that you will have access to. And even though it is, I think, oh my gosh, I should have the date in front of me, shouldn't I? I think it's December 2nd. You do have access to the sessions for way longer. Like, you don't have to listen to all of them on that day. So it's December 2nd, but you have access until January of 2024 to listen to all the sessions. So you don't have to listen to them all in one day. If you don't have time on December 2nd, you can even wait till it's the winter break to have a listen to some of the sessions as well. Again, I'll put the link in the show notes so that you can check that out and see if that professional development fits your needs right now and something that you want to do with for yourself. But yeah, I'm going to stop talking now. I'm going to let you go. And I want to thank you so much for joining me, and I hope you have a great day.